Hi there, everyone, and welcome to the 14th Photography Podcast on photography.ca. My name is Marco. We are coming to you from Montreal, Quebec, Canada, and today is March 18, 2007. For today's show, we are doing an interview with Montreal photographer André Nantel. André is a biologist, he's a professor at McGill, and he's also a fantastic photographer. And today we are going to talk about macro photography, and we're also going to talk about stock photography, both traditional and micro photography. And André has quite a lot of experience with regard to those subjects, so rather than summarize it or talk about it, let's get into it now. So I'd very much like to welcome our guest on today's show, and the guest today is André Nantel. And André is a biologist who works for the Government of Canada. He's also a professor at McGill, and he's also an excellent photographer. And today we're going to focus on some of the stuff that André's picked up over the years. And welcome, André. Welcome to the Photography.ca podcast.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Excellent, excellent. Pleasure to have you. So first off, because we just started mentioning, a little bit about your background, I guess I wanted to know, how long have you been photographing, and what was your first camera?
Well, my first camera that I could call my own was a Yashica FXD film camera, a regular SLR that I bought when I was in Cégep, oh God, probably 25 years ago. And it was used on and off until I broke it in Costa Rica 4.5 years ago. And that's when I discovered digital photography, and then this is when an occasional interest became a passion.
Okay, but you've been photographing now for like a good 20 years, like you say.
Yes.
Just so people can know right off the bat, you have a website called Digital Apoptosis, which, could you explain what that is for almost everyone that won't know what that is?
Well, Keith, yes, the term apoptosis essentially is related to one of my many research interests. Apoptosis essentially means programmed cell death, and it's something that happens in development where a cell is damaged or told to die, and it kills itself for the good of the body, and it's very relevant to cancer research, for example. And when I picked the name digital apoptosis, that's, for example, the reason why you don't have palmed hands. It's because the cells in between your fingers when you're growing in your mother's womb, after a while, those cells between the fingers enter apoptosis and you end up with nice, clean fingers. And the term I thought was pretty relevant to both my work and a photo blog on digital photography.
And because we're talking about cancerous things and things that are small, I'd like to talk about some of your smaller images that I found very, very interesting and that we're going to feature in the photographer section of the site as well. And there'll be links to the show notes, both to your site and to those photos on photography.ca. But in terms of your smaller images, what inspires you to create the smaller images? And then secondly, how are they done on a technical way for the technical people or gear people on the site?
Okay, well, going into photo macro photography is a fairly new thing for me, because when I started the photo blog was because of my job. I was traveling a lot, and I was doing a lot of landscape travel photography, and I was always able to feed the photo blog like this. But this past 6 to 12 months, I've traveled a little bit less, and it was winter. And winter, after you've done a photo blog for 3 years, you've pretty much photographed everything that there is to photograph around the area. And I was running out of interesting thing to capture. So I've decided to start going a little bit more into macro photography, even though I'm not perfectly equipped to do that. So some of the pictures that you picked up, for example, were pictures of playing with liquids, essentially dropping liquids and trying to take very fast photography and capture the drops as they are occurring. And normally when you're doing photography like this, the best lens that you want to use is something like a 100mm macro lens. And that's not what I have, actually. I have a fairly standard 17 to 85mm lens. But because my camera is, because I have an EFS camera, it adds an extra 1.6-fold increase in the magnification. So it's almost like I have 160mm, and that allows me to take some pretty close-up images.
So you're not getting true macro, but you're getting pseudo-macro that's good enough to intrigue a guy like me and many other people.
Exactly, and so essentially convincing me that my next lens will be a macro lens, and I would have bought it if I didn't break my camera 2 weeks ago. But essentially, the way I usually set up these shots is in my kitchen, first of all, because my table in my living room is next to a bay window, so I get a lot of natural light on the one side. I also have a regular flash that's connected to the top of the camera, and then usually it is shifted to the side onto an umbrella reflector that's usually on my left. So the way I can this way I can get light. I have natural light on one side, and I get a flash of flashlight on the other side. Then it's simply a question of taking exposure times that are as small as you can, usually 100 to 1/250th of a second. And you also have to be willing to waste a lot of well, I was about to say film, but of course, essentially spend a lot of time taking an obscene number of pictures, because when you're taking water drop, it's very, very difficult to capture them properly.
That was actually my next question, Andre. For a shot like water drops or milk drops or things like that, how long would you be shooting for before you get a shot you're satisfied with?
I think I had about 5 shots I'm really happy with, and that was about 2 hours of work and between 300 and 400 images. And also it took me a while to really figure out how to do it so that the light is good, being able to have the water drop or the liquid drops at the right height and at the right speed to be able to get effects that I like. And the way I would normally do it is I would take a Ziploc bag that was filled with liquid and take a pin to make a little hole on that so I could hold it above my head and drop it onto the plate, and the other hand would be on the trigger, and I would take pictures almost continuously.
Wow. Would you say that 2 hours is a normal length of time for your macro work?
Yeah, 1 or 2 hours usually. If it's a movement macro work, that's how long it would take. I mean, to set up and take the pictures, go on the computer, see how they look, then go back and take some more after correcting for either light, position of the reflectors, and also position of the lens. I was really at the limit of my lens capacity in the sense that it was set as close as I could. The focus was at the limit. The F was set at about F18 or F11 so that I could have a good depth of field. But even then, I was pushing things a little bit. I wish I could have taken F22, but I didn't have enough light for that.
Well, from my perspective, I know photographers are always our hardest critics, and from my perspective, I look at a lot of photos, and they're very well done. I know we always want to go one step further, but they're quite well done, Andre.
The other secret, of course, is to always shoot in RAW,
right?
Because then you have a lot of wiggle room to play with the color balance and to adjust the exposure. I tended to underexpose a little bit to get a bigger to freeze the liquid in place, and then you go in RAW and you take the right side of the histogram, essentially, to get what you want.
That's actually a very good tip. I know a lot of people are just getting digital cameras now, and sometimes those settings on the back of the camera or, you know, in the menu are difficult. You know, JPEG, RAW, just large JPEG, small JPEG. But I'm totally with you on this. Shoot, if you have the opportunity, shoot RAW.
Even get the ISO a little bit. I don't remember what ISO I ended up using. I know it wasn't 100 because the exposure time was too long. And then you get noise, but then I also use noise reduction software to try to keep everything under control. And if you're dealing with liquid, even if you're losing a little bit of sharpness, it's not the end of the world, especially with the milk pictures, because everything is all milky.
Right, it's all blasted anyway.
Yep.
Very good, very good. So again, a good tip for those listening, shoot RAW if you have the choice. Shoot RAW.
Always do.
And another thing that Andre is very into that I know a lot of our listeners are also into is stock photography. And I know there's a big difference between traditional stock photography houses and now there's micro stock photography houses. I was wondering if you could, you know, give us a little bit of a synopsis of your experience in general with stock photography, if you wouldn't mind.
No problem, Marco. So after about a year doing the photo blog, I've noticed that my skill in photography was getting a lot better, and people kept saying, "Wow, you really should be selling those." And I said, "Well, that wouldn't be a second job, but it could certainly help me afford more gear, at least being able to buy gear without my wife looking at me funny. So I started looking at various places that people can sell their photograph, and essentially the industry for especially the semi-pro photographer, there's essentially two worlds in photography right now. There's the traditional photography houses, but not real as traditional as in saying that they are willing to accept amateur photographers. And the two big houses there are essentially Alamy and Acclaim Images, even though Acclaim is not taking on any more photographers. And these are photography agency that will sell either rights managed or royalty free images. I don't want to go into these distinctions during the talk, but essentially they sell them at a fairly high to a very high price per image. So they can be between $50 to $5,000 for a single image. And the advantage of that, of course, is that you make a lot of money per picture. The disadvantage is not you're not going to be selling them very often unless you're really, 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 really good. The other aspect of selling photography, and this is really an offshoot of the universality of broadband internet and the low-cost, high-quality DSLR cameras, is what is called the microstock agencies. And there's two big companies on that. One's called iStock Photo, which is actually based in Calgary. Another one called Shutterstock, which is based in New York. And they have the characteristic of essentially going the Walmart route, where you sell a lot, but for a very small price. And we're talking usually a dollar per picture. Now, you can guess that some traditional photographers are, this can lead to very, very heated arguments, whether you're comparing traditional agencies and microstock agencies, because in some cases they're saying you're devaluing your work by selling them at such a low price. And essentially the reverse argument is that, in my own experience, the cost per image per year is, in my experience, has been higher with the microstock than it is with the traditional agencies, even though I've sold pictures in both.
If you don't mind my interrupting, obviously the people that are buying either from the traditional stock houses or the micro stock houses, these are different types of clientele. Who would be buying from the traditional houses as opposed to the micro houses?
Well, the example in the traditional houses, I've had four sales last year, two of which I don't know who bought them. These were essentially $100 sales. One of them were two pictures that were bought by a DreamWorks SKG, and they're actually going to be used in the next Will Ferrell movie that's coming out in about 2 weeks. So if you go and see A Blaze of Glory, and Will Ferrell is in a hotel room with a gorgeous woman, very skimpily dressed, and you look out the window and there's going to be this really nice image of the Olympic Stadium, well, that one is mine.
Excellent, excellent. Congratulations.
Thank you. So that's how I paid the camera. As for the microstocks, I've seen my pictures used. Actually, the funny story was I went to an IGA grocery store maybe about 2 months ago, a little bit around Christmas time. They had a photography contest, which was give us your pictures of the province of Quebec. And out of the four pictures on the posters, two of them were mine. So I actually participated in a contest using the same pictures that they had on their posters just to play with their heads.
Wow, very interesting.
I didn't win, though. And also, I've seen my pictures used in a lot of travel brochures, and it's also been used in several web pages. The thing with the microstocks is that the client base is extremely broad, in a sense that many people who used to just go into Google Image and steal the images there because they couldn't afford $100, $200, $500 for a picture, they would just go there and steal it. Now what they're doing is they're paying fairly low amount, but there's so many of these clients that the payback is actually becoming interesting. The one thing with the microstocks, no, it's a little bit like the clients. You have to go in at the right time to really get the advantage. Now it's starting to get more and more difficult to really have an impact in that. There are so many amateur photographers that are going into these agencies and submitting photos that they now have very, very large portfolio. Shutterstock has about 2 million pictures. iStock probably 1.5 million by now. So everything that was easy to photograph has been photographed in any way imaginable. So they're becoming much more pickier in who they let in anymore. So fortunately, I got in at the right time. And the more you stay, the more obviously the people who buy the pictures start to know you by name, just not just by your images. And you can see gradually your levels of sales per image going up and up. And this year has been great for me.
So how long have you been with those agencies again?
I've been with them for about a year and a half. I got in August of 2005. Now I have a portfolio of about 400 images. And this year I'm making about $300 a month with just that. So, I mean, it's not enough money to live on, but it's certainly enough money to get some nice gear.
Yeah, or some nice beer.
Yes. Or scotch.
No, but thank you very much for telling our visitors that money amount, actually. I'm sure it's always a curious thing for people. And, you know, if people are doing this as a hobby as well, you know, so they have, you know, their main job and they're doing photography as a hobby and they're serious, you know, almost professional, semi-professional.
Oh, and there are people who have who are actually even using MicroStock as a professional level. The queen of MicroStocks, whose name is Lise Gagné, is actually from Montreal. And she's the person they use as an example of you can actually make a lot of money out of that. So maybe she's listening to this podcast. I don't know.
I don't know either.
You should interview her. That'd be interesting.
Huh. You know what? What's her name one more time?
Lise Gagné.
You know what? We'll put a link to her site as well if she has one or some of her images.
I'll try to find it.
Excellent. Excellent. And I guess the last thing I wanted to ask you was, you know, as always, do you have any projects for the future? What are you thinking of? What's stimulating your mind photographically these days, for now or for the near future?
Usually the moment I'm happier with a camera is when I'm visiting a place I've never been to and I can start, I go into a really photography radar mode, and that's when I'm happiest. Like when I was in Croatia last year or in Costa Rica 2 years ago, that's what I like the most doing, is to walk around a place that's new for me and take as many great pictures as I can. So I'm finally starting to travel a lot more. I'm going to be in San Diego next week and El Salvador on Easter. So that's something I'm really forward to, is walking around these places taking pictures.
Is that because everything just feels a little fresher when it's a new place?
Exactly. It feels fresher. It feels different. Very often I've been very lucky weather-wise. When I'm traveling for work, I usually take one day before or one day after extra to take pictures. And on almost every one of my trips, that day has always turned out gorgeous, the only exception being Scotland and Switzerland, which, of course, in February, it's always crappy over there. But most of the time, I've always been lucky to take what I call my photography, and that's what keeps me sane.
And it might even actually be just the fact that generally when we're away, I mean, unless it's for work and we're really swamped, usually we have more leisure time when we're away. So our mind is just less stressed. We're not thinking about mortgages and jobs. We're, you know, more relaxed. And maybe that's why the creative juices flow more freely as well.
Yes. I mean, I've noticed also that photography is a great excuse, and I also having to feed the photo blog every day, it's a great excuse to just get me out of the house. So there are times where I'm just sitting there and go like, okay, I don't have any pictures. I need to go. Oh, there's a highlights festival. I'm going to go there and take pretty pictures. And I think I'm more outgoing than I would be probably at my age if it wasn't for photography.
Huh. So it's quite the, you know, it's quite the social outlet as well. I mean, it sounds like you mentioned, you know, just a few moments ago with regard to people buying your pictures, you're probably also making a lot more friends because you're out there on the web and you're shooting and people are commenting on your blog, and probably people like me are finding you because you're more accessible.
Yep, no, that's the thing that I really like, and that was my cell phone. Give me a second.
Not a problem. Okay, so now that we're both too absent-minded to remember what the heck we were talking
about. God, we're old and stupid.
You know what? I just wanted to, before I let you go, actually, because we've been speaking a while, I just wanted to just pick your brain on something you mentioned a few minutes back as well, about how photographers can have heated discussions about selling their images for $1 as opposed to $100 or $1,000. I'm just wondering if, in general, isn't the... I mean... as artists, in quotation marks, we want our work to be seen. So, I mean, I guess there would be a very strong argument to be made that, you know, are you really devaluating the work, or are you allowing more people to see it? I mean, if no one gets to see your work, isn't that worse? Isn't the best thing possible to see your work? And if someone's able to buy it for a dollar and you're happy and they're happy, isn't that the better way to go?
That's exactly what I've been thinking, in the sense that I'd rather sell 1,000 pictures for a dollar than one picture for $1,000. The other thing that I like about the microstock is it's been a tremendous learning experience, because you know right away what sells and what doesn't in a fairly short amount of time. And by then, I was really able to decide, okay, what type of pictures I can send and are going to sell, and which ones I just won't bother. I keep them for myself, and I keep them for my blog, and I'm not wasting time with those. When you're selling only a few pictures per year, you're not learning which one, how to do stock photography. But when you're selling several thousands a year, you're learning. You're figuring out what works, what doesn't, and that's really a way to get experience very quickly.
Very interesting. And like we said, the fact that more people have the work is a good thing. I mean, if everyone was rich and everyone could pay, you know, $100 to $1,000 plus per photo, yahoo. But that's not the case.
Yeah, if you were stock photographers in the 80s and used to sell pictures for $500, you're probably pretty pissed by now. But the world changes, and don't blame us. Blame the internet.
Right. Yeah, blame the internet. But you know, if we don't adapt, we die, as you well know, being in your field of biology.
Exactly.
So I'd like very much to thank you, Andre, for this interview.
It's been a pleasure.
It was a pleasure for me as well. And most of the stuff we talked about is going to be in the show notes for people. Links to Andre's site, links to the photographer she spoke about, and links to the stock agencies as well, both traditional and micro. So thanks again, Andre, and I expect we might have occasion to do another podcast with you in the future if you're interested.
I'm always am. Thank you very much, Marco.
Thanks, Andre.
Bye.
And that will do it for this week's podcast. I'd very much like to thank Andre Nantel for sharing his photographic experience and his personal experiences with stock photography with our listeners. It was very much appreciated, Andre, and thanks again. I know a lot of our listeners were interested and are interested in stock photography, and you really helped share it on a personal level, so thanks again. I do believe that the next podcast I will be doing will be all about the Lens Baby tool that you can use for digital cameras, which plays with selective focus effects, and it should be a really interesting podcast, and I'm very much looking forward to playing with the Lens Babies tool and talking about it. So until then, everyone, happy shooting, and see y'all next week. Bye for now.